welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network. And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker, right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station. No, Tommy, it's not the Insurgent Radio Network. Hasn't been for quite some time, so get it straight. And also, about twice a week, you get the day wrong. What the hell's with that? I'm looking over here at the Frank Silva Memorial Clock, and it says this is the 29th of July. But it don't say the day. I gotta get my watch down here that says the day, because I keep doing that, and that makes me seem like a dummy. Anyhow, I plead guilty. It is the 29th, and it is Friday, Freya's Day, Ladies' Day in the bunker. Tribute to the she-wolves around the country that not only donate to us, but they also furnish valuable intelligence information on the various enemies of our race. Nobody can get intelligence information like a woman. I've told you many times before, if I had to have 10 intelligence spies, I want 9 women and 1 guy. The 1 guy is just to keep an eye on the women. By the way, is she gone? Has she left? She's all dressed in white. Is she gone? We're not safe until she's gone. It's going to be my next sign out front of the house. Probably get it out there today. It's going to say, is she gone? Half the people won't know what the hell I'm talking about because they got their head up their ass. But half of them will, and I'm getting more and more waves and hoots and hollers going by my house. People are starting to get real friendly around here. I'm going to have to take that into consideration. Everybody likes humor. Everybody likes a joke, or should. If you don't like humor and you don't like a joke, there's something wrong with you, boy. You must not be white. Sign out front today, or the one I got out there now, don't blame Russia, blame the bitch, is really getting a lot of thumbs up, I'll tell you that. You know, I tuned in for about 5 minutes of the Wicked Witch's speech. And I'll tell you one thing, I don't care if she was Marilyn Monroe or Zsa Gabor or anybody like that, I can't stand her voice. Her voice drives me up the wall. She sounds like an old whore you'd meet in a beer bar that's been smoking all her life and drinking all her life. That's what her voice sounds like. And I listen to that. And wearing white, you know, when you get married, if you're a virgin, you're supposed to wear white. Of course, that went by the wayside a long time ago. But they dressed her up like a virgin in a white jumpsuit. Can you believe? Well, she may be a virgin. I don't know. I don't think. Maybe she never slept with Bill at all. Maybe she just pimped out for him and got him babes. I don't know. Well, let's see here now. We got a book to read here. Oh, incidentally, not to let you down, there's a rumor that I picked up years ago, supposedly from a person who was reliable. I don't even remember who it was at the time, but that's back when I had some confidence in the right wing, that sometimes they would get it right, in which they told me that Bob Matthews had said on the list he had of people to take care of that David Duke was one of them. And I think there was another right-wing leader. Well, I've repeated that several times over the years, and nobody's ever come forth and squelched it. But recently there's a big flap going on in the right wing between John DeNugent and David Duke and a bunch of these right wingers. And I'm not really involved. I'm just sort of on the side watching. But I gave that information to DeNugent, and he put it out. And I got to thinking, before this goes any more decades, you better check it out well. So I went to the second in command of Bob Matthews, who is still very much alive and still very much one of our friends and comrades. And I said, I asked him the question, was this true? Was this real? He said, no, Bob Matthews didn't threaten Duke to kill him, but he did go to visit Duke, and he asked Duke to get on board with the order British wagon. Duke refused, and Bob told him, he said, you know, this could get you kneecapped. And so that's where that rumor came from. So I don't like to be wrong on my intelligence information. And when I find something that I've repeated or said that is wrong, I'm going to correct it if at all possible, because otherwise, how can you have confidence in me if I don't tell you the truth as much as I can? So anyhow, there you got it, and that's one right-wing rumor laid to rest. Now, I've had some conversations with Mrs. Matt Hill's mother in the last few days about the book, telling her I'm going to order a few and get them out to some of our POWs. And they're going to have this civil trial out there, I believe, in Colorado. I'm still not quite clear on what the civil trial is about, who's suing who. But she had, like I said, I think the other day, she'd asked me whether I would testify. And I said, well, sure, I'll testify, but I don't know what I could testify to, because I only met Matt one time in my life and talked to him a couple of times on the phone, and that's all I know about that. But if someone wants to get me transportation out there to the trial, I'll testify. Well, turns out Matt only wants creators, which seems to me to be a mistake, but that's what he wants, only creators to testify at this civil trial. So his mother asked me to contact any creators I knew in the Midwest, because she said there's one she's in contact with in Michigan, and I guess they're going to try to get a carload of these guys and or girls and go on out there to testify in this civil trial. And I told her I didn't know one creator. There's a few up in Chicago, two or three, but I don't count them as creators. And Mr. Logsdon, who to me is, well, he's proven himself to be white trash. That's too bad. So I wouldn't recommend any of these guys that I've met in the past from Chicago. But there may be some good, decent people around the Midwest here who consider themselves creators. And if they get in touch with me or email me or whatever, and I can refer them to Matt Hill's mother, and then maybe they can get something going. Otherwise, there's nothing I can really do about it. I'm going to have to look into this civil trial thing, and I'll have his mother explain to me what they're trying to do. But he's got to understand one thing. Matt has to understand, and you know me, I'm the crotchety old guy who's paranoid, and that doesn't mean there's nobody after me, but I don't like to build these guys up too much in prison. Some people like to do that, but I think they have to be realistic and look at the facts. And these bastards are not going to leave any of our friends out of prison until they absolutely have to, and hopefully they'll die before they get out. Yeah, that's true. And so I'm seeing Matt is working his ass off trying to get appeals going, all that kind of stuff. But I don't want to discourage him, and I'm not going to discourage him, because he's not one that takes advice too easily. He wouldn't be in there if he took my advice. But anyhow, that's the situation. They're going to hold on to you as long as they can and maybe dream up something new against you in the meantime. So if you're going to write these guys in prison, don't write a bunch of crazy-ass Hollywood Nazi stuff and stuff that's blatantly going to go into their file and make it hard for them to make parole. Just write good letters. You can write a racial letter without being crazy. I do it all the time, and I send material all the time. And main thing is they want to know what's going on. Like I just talked to Richard Scutari yesterday, and he said, Tom, he said, you've been sending me this magazine. You've been subscribing for me, Mother Jones, you know. And there are a lot of good, interesting articles, even in this pretty left-wing, very left-wing magazine. But he said, Tom, I'm getting millions of letters from George Soros and all these people. I mean ads and stuff to send them money. And he says, please send me Prevention Magazine. So I've got to order him a subscription to Prevention Magazine. That's about health. And I told him, I said, you know who started that, don't you? He said, well, not really. I said, Rodal. He started that. And he was very, very popular for a long time. He appeared on lots of television shows and all that kind of stuff. Well, one day he turned up at one of the big television shows. I forget who it was. If I could remember the name, you'd know it. And he had a heart attack right on the stage and died. And that became, unfortunately, a dark joke around the country for a long time. The guy that run the biggest health advisory magazine in the country and dropped dead of a heart attack on the TV stage. So anyhow, I hope the magazine does you more good than it did him. I'm going to read this from this book of Matt Hale's, Racial Loyalist Manifesto. And where I disagree, I'm going to comment. I'm not doing that to kill the sales of the book or to stop you from reading the book, because that's not my plan. My plan is to try to give you some insight into what I've learned over the years, and then you can mix it up and figure it out. And I'm not trying to hurt the sales of the book. I'm trying to help with the sales of the book. I think it's going to run around $9 a copy. And I'll get the address for you, and you can order it. Because even though I'm reading it to you, it's good to have a hard copy of the book so you can refer to it. If you, like me, I've got these hundreds of books around here, and they're all marked up and yellow-lined and everything else, so that if I need information, I know right where to get it. Always remember, when I'm critical of something, I'm not criticizing the individual or the author personally. This is nothing personal. We can't let things get personal. Well, I must admit, it gets a little personal with people like David Duke, because I think he hurts the movement, the struggle, quite a bit. But anybody else, I don't let it get personal. I just don't talk to them. Like Tubby Covington out there. I just don't talk to people like that. And I go the other way. Unfortunately, I didn't put a dot where I ended up the other day. So I may miss a paragraph or two, but I'm going to start out here, which is probably about where it was. With Racial Loyalist Party, we spit in the eye of such a state of affairs. We reclaim the word racial as a positive, not a negative word. We're glad to be racial in all things and at all times. Agreed. We throw the word to the forefront of all dialogue without reservation. We breathe the word racial joyfully rather than with dread. We stand for it, not run from it. We know that it cannot be wrong to be racial when our race its existence is at stake. We know that it cannot be wrong to be racial when it is our race that distinguishes us from all other creatures on this earth and even elsewhere. We know that it cannot be wrong to be racial any more than it can be wrong to be human. We know that it cannot be wrong to be racial any more than it can be wrong to be natural. And to be racial does not somehow deny to the other races their own racialism, which they are free to have as they see fit. Rather, to be racial is to rejoice in one's own kind, to have esteem for one's own people, to love what one is. To be racial is to love the natural world and to wish to preserve it. It is an undeniable fact that there are races. To seek to preserve one's own race is hence racial and good. T.T. says, unfortunately, there's a growing movement in this world to say races do not exist, which is a very dangerous position for humans to take, no matter what race they're from, because race is extremely important, as was tribalism in the beginning. No one complains when people voice certain concern for the human race, and thus no one can rightfully complain when we racial loyalists voice concern for the white race, a race which, unlike the human race, actually exists. Surely, people do not mean to say that something that does not actually exist, the human race, is morally acceptable to advocate while the white race, which does, is not. And surely, people do not mean to say that it is morally acceptable to advocate for existence and future of whales, dolphins, owls, and innumerable other forms of life, but morally unacceptable to advocate for their own form of life, their white race. We racial loyalists love animals as much as anyone, but a world without ourselves is far more unacceptable to us. It is morally unacceptable to us that the best interests of our white race should be utterly abandoned. It is morally unacceptable to us that we should be forced to live in the same societies and countries as other races where they destroy what we hold dear. It is morally unacceptable to us that our white people should be deprived of a land of their own. It is morally unacceptable to us that a white woman should ever give birth to a non-white baby, a freak act that flies in the face of nature, an act that sickens every white man and woman who still retain their natural instincts. It is morally unacceptable to us that a white man should ever sexually gratify himself with a female of another race at the risk of his seed also being subjected to blood poisoning. It is morally unacceptable to us that our white people are forced to pay taxes so as to feed, clothe, and heal the other races, thus being deprived of their own money for the benefit of themselves. It is morally unacceptable to us that even a single white woman has ever been allowed to be raped by a non-white beast, and that we live under such an order today that such a thing is allowed to happen by the hundreds of thousands, if not millions. It is morally unacceptable to us that our white youth are continuously assaulted in the public schools by black, brown, and yellow savages with practical impunity. It is morally unacceptable to us that our culture has been negrified and Jewified to the point that our people, our youth especially, are mimicking blacks and are asserting the morals and ethics of a Jew. And that reminds me, I've told you before, driving through larger cities, often see walking along the street one Negro in front of about four or five white kids trailing behind him, usually a bigger physical Negro with four or five dumbed out white kids following him as their leader. That almost makes me drive off the road in disgust. It is morally unacceptable to us that we should live in a society where faggots can marry each other, and where, if we should dare voice our opposition to such a perverted state of affairs. The problem is alleged to be somehow with us. It is morally unacceptable to us that white people should ever be prevented from discriminating in favor of their own kind. It is morally unacceptable to us that other races are natural rivals and hence enemies, for the resources of this planet should be given any aid by our race whatsoever. It is morally unacceptable to us that our white people should be atomized individuals rather than a community unified for its own interests. It is morally unacceptable to us that the present society in which we live condemns our youth to a total lack of meaning in life, loyalty to one another, and self-worth. Yes, we racial loyalists have our own morals, morals devoted to the welfare of our own kind, our race. We do not trade them for the morals of other races, for that of a television culture, and nor do we trade them for morals of those who are not loyal to their white race. We want only our own blood. We want only our own culture, our moral allegiances to nature's laws, not the artificial destructive laws of the present willy-nilly mongrel society that destroys race, culture, and spirit. We are racial because it is our race that concerns us everywhere. We want what is best for our race always. We hence do not let those who have been propagandized against our cause for our race divorce us from the very word that describes it. We do not distract ourselves from the true issue before us by contenting ourselves with proxy words for the palatable to a pandered and pampered public. We slice through the fear and hypocrisy with a meat cleaver. We confront our present demise as a people, not with a feather, but with a battering ram, with our focus avowedly on race. Our race will survive. Not so were we to go down blind alleys of so-called political correctness by using only those terms that meet with our foes' approval. With our focus assertedly on race, the people will not be left with any doubt as to what we deem important. With our focus assertedly on race, we will not lose sight of that which is the most important, ourselves. We do not call ourselves nationalists because our struggle is for all white people, not a mere part of them. Nationalism has all too often resulted in white people killing one another, or as Tommy says, fratricide. With the excessive exertion of national pride and chauvinism comes ethnic rivalries within our racial household with ensuing fractions, hatred, and even death. It has happened way too often in our past to deny. Nations are the rambunctious sons that must be kept in check by the stern but just racial father. Nations are parts of our racial body, but are not part more important than the whole racial body itself. Hence, no nation of the white race can be allowed to come before the survival of the white race as a whole. No branch of a tree, the nation, can be more important than the tree race itself. True national ethnic pride is good, but never with the result of harm to the greater white race itself. We racial loyalists thus reject the term nationalism in favor of racial loyalty. Agreed. And it's long overdue that all those who are actually racial loyalists do the same. Yes, nationalism, Tommy says, is divisive, too divisive. And I was just rethinking some of our positions have been on National Socialism or how National Socialism turned out. No matter what you think about the admirable qualities of the German military and so forth, the fact remains that due to at least partially, maybe half, the millions of white people died in World War I and World War II. And you can't say that was a good thing, no matter which side won. And so to revive those kind of nationalistic positions is suicide. And we should not ever do that anymore or be a party of it. I get pretty upset with Hollywood Nazis who promote all the killing by the Wehrmacht and so forth in World War II, and the people on the other side, the Brits and our Americans, and let's say they still worship the killing of World War II and World War I. They wallow in it. They have holidays for it, and it's fratricide. Anyhow, on we go. Nationalism only confuses the true issue, whether our race will live or die. It divides white people from one another, whereas they must instead stand and unite. Nationalism takes our people's attention away from the fundamental premise of what we actually believe in, that our white race everywhere must live. Nationalism is a relic that we can ill afford in an age when all white people as a race, not as a mere nation, are under assault. Nationalism is a diversion from the fight for our racial life. And Tommy says that goes for the attack on the white race from within, because probably our greatest enemy that's attacking us is attacking us from within. It's the predatory capitalists and so forth that are right here in the United States and Europe and the Western world. And so that part of it can't be blamed on non-white people. These are white renegade war criminals. When the redskin savages assaulted the wagon trains in the American West, the white people in those trains did not ask each other whether they were German, Swedish, French, or other nationality. Rather, they circled their wagons as white people and fought them off. When the Mongols stormed into Europe, our ancestors did not care who spoke German, French, Hungarian, Russian, or whatever. Rather, they banded together as one race and fought together as white people against them. When the mongrel Turco-Mongoloid Huns made it all the way to France 800 years earlier with their invasion of Europe, Franks and Romans put aside their own conflicts with one another and fought as a race against them to drive them out. Racial brotherhood, not nationalism, is what saved Europe. Racial brotherhood, not nationalism, is what won the American continent for the white race. Worldwide racial brotherhood. Racial loyalty is what will save us now. The First World War was a nationalistic war and devastating to our white race. The Second World War was a nationalistic war, less so than the first, true, but also devastated our white race. Who benefited from these wars? Certainly not our white race, which was decimated by the tens of millions, nor were the nations of our race that fought them. Instead, these wars are directly responsible for the plight of our white race and finds itself in worldwide today. A new attitude is thus needed, and we are white before anything else. And the first loyalty will be to that of the white race, not nation, before anything else. Nationalism is the Pandora's box from which anything may come out of it, including destruction. Despite all good intentions, nationalism is the divider. Racial loyalty, the uniter in the struggle for our racial life that is upon us. Nationalism is conductive of interracial mistrust. Racial loyalty is conducive to racial love. We racial loyalists seek the preservation of all white nations' ethnicities. Nationalism, in its truest sense, does not care about any nation but its own. Agreed. Thus, it is our commitment to race that makes us racial loyalists different. We use the term that is most accurate, that is the most unifying, that is the most embracing, that traverses the past and present with equal resilience. that cares not about lines on a map, nor about the dictates of governments, that do not care about our racial life. With racial loyalty, all white people are a united power rather than a fractured one. With racial loyalty, we are no longer a race at war with itself. With racial loyalty, we proclaim our being and what we must do to preserve that being, be loyal to it. That loyalty crosses all borders, that loyalty crosses all religious distinctions, that loyalty shoves aside so-called classes. Our skin becomes our uniform. Our genes become our terrain. Our racial tree stands strong, all branches of it gathering the sun's rays for life of that tree. With racial loyalty, our white race survives and thrives. Nationalism is the pretender to the throne, whereas racial loyalty is the true king. Now, let me comment on this with this Trump. Trump, there's a lot of things that he says that probably a lot of racial people like, but you notice he's talking like an extreme nationalist about, bombing people and all that kind of stuff, and doubling the size of the military and all that kind of stuff. And that's playing with fire. That's what we've done before. And so that leaves him out primarily as somebody who could be confided with to help our race. He also talks too much about how much he loves the Negroes and all that kind of stuff, which I believe is phony, of course. But somebody's got to stand up and say, I don't love the other races. I love my own race. And when you get a candidate like that, let me know. Nationalism is the pretender to the throne, whereas racial loyalty is the true king. Nationalism is a dubious luxury in the best of times. Racial loyalty is the only salvation in the worst of times and the only way to prevent possible calamity in the best of them. With racial loyalty, all white people join together for the common cause. With racial loyalty, all white men circle their wagons against their common foe, preserving their nation in the process. With racial loyalty, it matters not which nation is better than the other, but rather that our race, composed of many nations, must live. It is our race out of which grew all of our nations. It is our race that includes all of our nations. It is our race to which we are the most true. We racial loyalists end the myopia of nationality when our race is faced with a sea of coloreds against it. We will no longer be divided and conquered by missing the forest for the trees. It is our race that calls us to do battle. It is our skin that is our uniform. Nationalist is the term for he who loves only his own nation, and I might say only his own group. Racial loyalist is the term for he who loves his own race and his greater white race. Thus we are racial loyalists. You know, you got all these right-wingers running around, right-wing races, that they form a whole lot of small groups warring against each other, arguing over all kinds of miscellaneous crap, instead of coming together, at least spiritually and politically and so forth, to fight as one front. And so all these little groups that have little separate fanatical ideas that don't serve the overall white race are counter-revolutionary, as far as I'm concerned. When we use the word nation, we are, of course, referring to an ethnic group, but not to all those inhabitants who happen to exist merely within the lines on a map, the way the word nation has been corrupted in the vernacular of today's world. Thus, no black man can be part of the Danish nation. For example, regardless of whether he lives within the borders of Denmark due to the simple fact that he is not a part of the Danish ethnicity. Thus no Arab or Jew can be part of the Dutch nation. For example, because they are not of the Dutch ethnicity. Nations are people of a particular ethnic stock, not lines on a map. A particular nation thus has nothing to do with a territory, but rather nations exist within territories. Due to mass confusion and ignorance on this point, this is yet another reason why it is time to dispense with the term nationalist. Too many people have been confused into thinking that non-whites are part of our nations and thus can somehow be nationalists too. We racial loyalists wish to dispense with all such confusions, not perpetuate them or facilitate them. The American nationalist, in particular, has been subjected to confusion because of the lack of an obviously American ethnic group, at least in the sense of a German or a French one. What nation does the American nationalist fight for exactly? A nation, including every race and mongrel derivative under the sun? This is a nation that we racial loyalists are uninterested in preserving. With the term racial loyalty, on the other hand, the matter is made plain. No one will confuse us as being for whatever can walk on two legs and speak with our supposed but actual non-existent nation of borders. No one will confuse that for which we advocate. No one will accidentally think that our cause is for the state, for the United States, or whoever happens to live within the borders of those states. Our cause, rather, is for blood and not borders. Our cause is for white people, wherever they may be found, not for non-whites, who erroneously are said to be part of our nation. We racial loyalists fight not for an American nation, but for all white people, whether they are Americans or not. White people are our people, not non-whites who live in the same territory as us, the same continent as us, or on the same earth as us. We dispense with the idiocy of feeling a kinship with those of different race in our countries while harboring an alienation from those of our own race elsewhere. That reminds me of a story a skinhead told me that happened when he was over, I believe, in Germany, or maybe it was Belgium, I forget. And I've told this story before. He was in a line in a supermarket. And you know, most supermarkets, of course, have separate lines that you can get in to expedite your purchase faster. There was a Vietnamese gal in one line, and a checker, and a Polish gal in the other line as a checker. And this German skinhead would go to the Vietnamese checker because he said he hated the Polish girl, the Polish white girl, which is ridiculous. It's obscene, in fact. But that goes on in Europe, more in Europe than here. The word nation has been very badly misused. And we correct that misuse. However, we cannot ignore the fact that misuse and what represents in the minds of those who erroneously think that a nation is something on a map or something that includes whoever exists within those lines. That's what they tried in the Middle East. They came in there, European nations, after the World War I, and destroying the Ottoman Empire, and they came in there and they cut up all the land and made borders, split people up and tribes up and everything else, and created all these funny countries. And they've been warring against each other ever since, and now our country, the State Department and our military are promoting it and going into it and getting thousands of our own white people killed because of the stupidity of trying to force borders on ethnic and tribal people. And it'll never, the killing will never stop until they back away from that. Okay. No use of the term nationalist neither describes nor divulges our loyalty to our race, nor accounts for the corruption of the word nation in the minds of our people, in America especially, and elsewhere. A nation is an ethnic group within a race, but if the people do not know it, valuable time is lost rectifying their confusion on the point, and nationalism is already diversionary as it is. And if we ourselves do not understand what our own cause is really about, we cannot prevail. Most of those who have been calling themselves nationalists are actually racial loyalists, but they have been using the wrong term due to habit and because they have been under the impression that the word nationalist is more palatable to the public. Well, that comes from the leadership in the right wing. It doesn't come from the rank and file. These so-called leaders in the right-wing racial struggle come up with these things because they're trying to improve their popularity with the public and maybe be more acceptable to the Jewish media. In reality, doing so and avoiding the use of the word race just prolongs our racial plight. It distracts people, including our own adherents, from the real issue. It evokes ethnic rivalries and historical grievances within our racial household that we cannot afford. It divides our race rather than unites it. It implies at best that we are fighting for a mere part of our race, a nation of it, rather than all of it, and at worst gives people the wrong idea that the issue for us is what goes on between lines on a map rather than what happens to our blood. Racial loyalists, on the other hand, makes the true issue clear: loyalty to our whole white race. Well, this brings up the Civil War. What a fratricidal, insane operation that was. The war was fought to save the property of very rich plantation owners and, for some degree, to northern industrialists. And it was a terrible thing, the most horrible thing that's ever happened on this continent to the white race. And who benefited by it? The arms makers back then, the bankers who loaned the money for the war, northern industrialists, and while they were still in power, the southern oligarchs, who were the bane to the working-class whites in the South. And if there was ever a war affecting the white race terribly, it was the Civil War, and we've never gotten over it. And some people are still fighting the Civil War, whites against whites in the South against whites in the North, which is ridiculous. We racial loyalists disdain all other proxy terms for our cause as well. We're not fighting for the West, for example, and the West is a term that should also be dispensed with. We're fighting for biology, not geography. We're fighting for race, not place. We're not even fighting for Western values. Rather, we are fighting for the race that created the values in the first place. The use of any term that could include, at least arguably, the other races along with our own is bad, and to deny that other races are part of the West appears silly to people on its face. If the West really does mean white people, as some will say, why use the proxy term of the West at all? Why not say what we actually mean rather than throw up a vague term like the West, as if we don't really mean it? Well, that also divides us from the so-called East, which includes Russia. Now, the racial elements in the East, of course, the Mongols, way east, But Russia has millions of white people. That's one thing that changed my view of things about warfare and war against communism, all that kind of stuff. When I first got a satellite dish and was able to watch the free feeds on the satellite from downtown Moscow and the people walking in the street, and I said, look, those people are just like us. They're all white. And we're not going to promote some kind of nuking of those people. And anybody that promotes nuclear armaments and possibility of nuclear warfare is our deadly enemy and should be taken care of. So in that sense, we agree with a lot of people on the left, but maybe for a different reason. The word white is not something to avoid like sin. It is who we are, whether we're in the West or not. The word white is not something to mistrust. It is rather something to love as who we are. Western culture is likewise a euphemism for white people, the culture of white people. Therefore, we should say white culture and not dance around with what is really important. There is no such thing as a Western race, but there is a white race. We are racial loyalists. Attack the idea outright that there is something wrong with using the word white, and that we should pander to anti-white hostility and wariness by avoiding the word. We realize that this is not some kind of struggle between West and East, or North and South, for that matter, or any other parlance of mere directions. This is rather a struggle for the preservation and advancement of our blood, whereas it happens to be. We need no masks and can ill afford them. Every description of our race must include the word white in it, and W should always be capitalized so as to stress the importance. Even if so-called Western civilization were destroyed, white men would rebuild it. If white men, though, are destroyed, there will be no Western civilization. We need to care about, since we will no longer exist. The race comes before its works. The race comes before its place. All proxy terms divert attention and effort away from the real issue, our racial survival. The racial loyalist party hence puts the attention and effort back where it belongs, the race. We draw a clear line in the sand rather than obscuring it. Since we are the entire white race, we racial loyalists use the word white to describe our race rather than terms that include only parts of such as Aryan, Nordic, and the like. Again, such clarity is important. There are white people who are not Aryans, the Finns, the Hungarians, the Estonians, the Basque, and there are many white people who are not Nordics, most white people actually. Thus, referring to ourselves by terms which would leave many white people out is a mistake, and we racial loyalists deign not to make that mistake. Well, I use the term Aryan as a title of nobility. Aryan means noble one in the Sanskrit. And that is the vernacular I use, Aryan, the noble ones of the white race. If you're not a noble one of the white race, you're not an Aryan. That's the way I use it. I don't think Matt and I ever talked about that. If we are loyal to the Aryan race, we must be loyal to the entire white race, and the terms we use must reflect the broad loyalty. We must have consistency for ourselves and for the race, our race that we mean to win for the racial loyalist cause. Of course, we have our individual ethnicities and rejoice in them. That is only natural and proper. If is our race as a whole, though, that is the greatest importance. And it is the white race that is the whole race, not Aryan, Nordic, European, or whatever. When all white people band together as one for their survival, our white people, will indeed survive, and through the survival of the white race as a whole will be the survival of our various individual nations, cultures, and languages. White describes our race better than any other word. It is as inclusive as possible, while excluding those who may technically be Caucasians but who are not white, such as Arabs, Jews, and Asian Indians. Well, like I say, I use the word nobility because the problem I have is so much of the white race is unusable. They're just lost to us. And to give so many millions of worthless whites, and they are worthless, the respect of a term like white is not, I don't think, in our best interest. I still think that we should have a term that delineates the best of the white race, the ones who sacrifice, the ones who fight, and the ones who never give up. And to me, that is the noble ones, the Aryans. So I'll have to talk to Matt about that. Okay, let's see here. Where are we at? It lacks the confusion and misrepresentations associated with the word Aryan, as well as includes all of us. It makes the true overriding distinction stand out that the world is composed of whites and non-whites. The term European, for its part, is too easily assumed not to include white people who are not in Europe now and whose ancestors perhaps never have been there. It connotes once again a place rather than a race, and thus the non-whites can easily claim to be European to now because many of them now live in Europe too. Also, there has never been a satisfactory answer to where exactly are the boundaries of Europe in any case. Defining a race based upon uncertain boundaries on a map is a mistake in its face. Yeah, I've gotten to the place where people email me or send me a letter and say I'm an Englishman, or they say I'm a German. I want to get involved. And I said, well, what is your race? Because you've got thousands, perhaps millions, of Negroids who can call themselves British or German. Even during World War II, there were mixed-race blacks in Germany that were left alone. So racial programs did not seem to entirely fit. So when somebody says, well, I'm white because I live in England, or I'm white because I live in Germany, I said, that's bullshit. I mean, you could be white. I used to have a subscriber to my newspaper from Central Africa who was white. But there weren't very many of him around. Lastly, the term European has for a long time been used to divide white people from one another on the Eurasian landmass, with talk about Europe and Russia, as if the Russian people are somehow not European. For all of those reasons, we racial loyalists disdain using the term European to describe our race. It is yet another confusing term that lacks the clarity to explain what exactly we are for and what we are not. By using the white instead, we dispense of this problem. No term concocted geography is our race. White is, from London to Vladivostok, from Lapland to Pretoria, from Anchorage to the Falkland Islands, our white race exists everywhere in the world, and we are for it. Well, I agree, but I do reserve the best of the best to be Aryan. Thus, we are racial loyalists, not nationalists. White, not any other term, and nor are we right-wingers either. Agreed. Again, here as elsewhere, we face a term that confuses the true issue, for its part in particular means even less than others. What it does mean means worse. We're told that people are either right-wing or left-wing, but on the face, neither term has anything to do with our white race and its interests, and thus those interests are ignored when our white race is divided into such raceless and artificial factions. I was thinking the other day along these lines that if a socialist fights for the race, or a socialist party fights for the race, then they're okay. I mean, if even a capitalist group fights for the race, they're okay. But if they don't, they're not okay. And of course, remember, Russia under communism, communism did not exist. Communism cannot exist, only in small groups and only usually for a short time. Every time it's tried pure communism, it fails. Russia was run by state capitalism, which was an enemy, really, of the white race. But on the other hand, what would have happened if Russia would have been capitalist from 1900 on? How many white people would be left in Russia? You got to understand that even under bad situations, sometimes it can serve something that's better. It's a hard thing to interpretate and go along with, but communism in its brutality, which was state capitalism, did preserve the bulk of the Russian white people. And maybe that wasn't their intent, but that's what happened. Where predatory capitalism is destroying the white race everywhere wherever it raises its head. In the so-called West. Sorry, Matt. Furthermore, while the term right-wing supposedly stands for belief in conservative principles, whatever that is, it is doubtful that we racial loyalists, loyal to our race before all else, and who want radical change so as to preserve our race in the midst of all the assaults against it, including assaults by traditional institutions, are conservatives, in the sense that the word is usually used. Whereas we who are true to the white race in all things and at all times, we racial loyalists want radical change of the current state of affairs by which our race is dying. Radical change does not seem to coincide with conservatism, since conservatism implies resistance to change. Indeed, conservatives tend to hate even the word radical and associate it with those whom they oppose. For us racial loyalists, though, the status quo is entirely unacceptable because it is destroying our race. Nor does right-wing or conservatism in any way express our loyalty to race before all else. Thus, we reject such terms. White is the issue. While those who call themselves conservatives usually claim to exalt tradition, they ignore their race, which created the traditions in the first place. We racial loyalists, on the contrary, declare that no traditional facet of life, whether it be a constitution, state, union of states, custom, or anything else, can be more important than our white race itself. And if it takes ending a constitution, a state, a union of states, or anything else created by man for the matter to preserve our white race and end the present threat against its cultural, genetic, and biological survival, we must do it. Hear, hear. Agreed. A constitution can be good, a flag can be good, a custom can be good, but the white race is always better. No document, no flag, no political order, no mode of living, no way of thinking can be more important than the race that created such things, or created them in the first place. Hence, tradition is not the true issue. The true issue is our white race that creates all traditions. Our first loyalty, thus, has to be ourselves, with all creations by our hands used to preserve and advance ourselves, our race. Conservatism as an ideology and loyalty is thus an error because it takes attention away from our race where it belongs and places it instead on the mere facets of existence, past and present. We racial loyalists instead place the continued existence of our people first and before all else. No constitution, no matter how good it might otherwise be, is going to save our race from genetic annihilation. No flag, as pretty as its colors and the configurations may be, is going to do the same, nor does duty to any creation of our forefathers remotely equal our duty to the future of our race. Many, if not most, right-wingers and conservatives could not care less about the fact that the white race is today being destroyed, and hence they do nothing to stop it. We racial loyalists must not compound the error by referring to ourselves by such misguided terms and by ennobling those who are not deserve an association with us in the process. We must identify ourselves only with those who share our loyalty to our kind and ossify ourselves with the parlance of the rotten status quo. So-called conservatism and the right wing, to the extent that they have ever been favorable to our racial existence at all, have obviously failed miserably to halt the cultural, genetic, and biological assault against our white race. That is reason enough to jettison such worthless terms and loyalties. Our racial loyalty describes the true crux of the issue. If a man is loyal to his race, then let him call himself such and not some other term that obscures or confuses where his true loyalty lies. And that's the ending of the reading for today, the 29th of July. And I'm getting to like this book more and more, getting to agree with it more and more. Maybe I'll end up working with this racial loyalty party. We'll see. Even though I've learned in the past that parties come and parties go, maybe this is a party that might catch on. Okay, that's it for today. I'll be back on Moon's Day with a fresh new show, and every 3 or 4 days we'll read some more of this book. I don't think I should read it every day, because not everybody wants to listen to me read it. They'd rather read it themselves. So 14:05, and like I said before, is she gone? Is she gone now? We're not safe until she's gone.
I'm in a position to know, because the Patrick Henry Society has studied the whole thing. The real problem, whether you like it or not, is whether you're going to sit back and let desegregation spread throughout the entire South. And it's an indisputable fact that there could be no other result. The Negroes will literally, and I do mean literally, control the South. The vote will be theirs. You'll have black mayors and black policemen the way they do in Chicago and New York already. Like is not a black governor and black doctors to deliver your babies. If they find time, that is. And that's the way it'll be. Did you ever stop to think about that? When you let those 10 enter your school, did you?